So this morning, it's great to have you, Joy. Why don't you join with me and welcome Joy as she comes to speak to us.
Thanks, Matt. I've never been here on a Sunday before, so it's really cool to be here. I pop over quite a bit and love hanging out with Matt and Claire and enjoy time with their family, but not been here for the wider family. So thanks for having me. It's brilliant. Like Matt said, I'm married to Paul and we've got two little children. Poppy is 5 and Finley is 8. And yesterday we had our village summer fair and we all took part in the tug of war competition. I was in the women's team and gave it everything I got, and we lost, and my whole body is really aching. So I might be kind of walking a little bit odd. But like Matt said, yeah, I'm really passionate about the church, engaged in society, really love the idea that God made us in his image, and he made us to bring what he'd said was really good, his creation, but not yet finished, and to just keep on working at it and making it even better so that we get to that final place in the book of Revelation where John describes a city of heaven. And so I love the idea that we can initiate projects and we can be involved in incredible, exciting opportunities, and we can bring whatever God's put inside of us and apply it to the world around us to see God's kingdom come and transformation. So Matt mentioned GLX. I just wanted to kind of explain a little bit of what that is. That's the ground level initiative to mobilize not just church leaders, but anyone that represents the image of God, so that's all of us, to engage in wherever God's put us. So it might be the school gate, or it might be the boardroom in business. It could be the local coffee shop. It might be a community initiative that God's put on your heart. But we want to inspire and equip all of you to advance the kingdom wherever God's put you. So we aim to put these gatherings on that are specifically not for church leaders, but are for people, other people, to try and just raise aspirations and say, what as a movement of people could we do if we think strategically about applying our gifts to the world? And I guess that's really what I'm interested in. So that's what I'm going to be talking about this morning. And I want to share with you some stories and some ideas that I've come across as I've been involved in supporting people who live in poverty and applying or getting the church mobilized into our community in Lincoln. And then I want to tell you some stories about how we've done it really badly and it's gone a little bit wrong. And I want to look at the story when Jesus encounters a woman at the well and how his encounter with her transformed her life, so that we can see how we can also encounter other people and see transformation happen. So I wonder if you've ever had an experience where you've read something or seen something that's dramatically changed the direction of your life. I guess most of you have done that, because when we encounter and find Jesus, it dramatically changes the direction of our life. But for me, I came across some theory about how we as Christians help other people, and it absolutely dramatically changed my life. So if I would say I saw Jesus, he changed my life, and then I read this thing that changed my life as well. And I've always, as I've been growing up, known that I want to help people. So my parents are really into social justice, and they brought me up as a little girl knowing that part of our role as the church, the body of Christ, is to see other people's lives change and to help other people. There's over 2,500 verses in the Bible that specifically says about God's heart for the poor and people in need. And so I knew that my expression of being a daughter of the King and a Christian is to see other people's lives change, help people who live in poverty. And I remember there's all sorts of ways that I've done that as a kid, you know, like sponsored walks and the 24-hour famine thing that go without food for 24 hours because I want to help those people who've got no food. And when I finished university, I thought, I want to crack on and do something with my life that really expresses God's heart for the poor and sees people who were in poverty, lifted from poverty. And so I finished university, I did psychology at university, and then I did some volunteering. I volunteered at our local homeless shelter and had loads of interesting conversations and connections with people who would never have met otherwise, who were street homeless in Lincoln. And then I did a couple of jobs working in charities and got to know other people living in some of the really deprived areas of Lincoln, really enjoyed meeting people and helping them, engaging people in volunteer work. And I remember after doing that for about 7 years thinking, I can see all these incredible, brilliant projects that and charities that the people in Lincoln are running, but in my church, we're really not doing anything. And so I went to see my pastor, Stuart, and I said to him, I think we could do something in this city to make this city a better place and to help people in poverty. And I think we should be doing more. And he said, great, why don't you do it then? And he offered me a job. I started as part of, with the church, started a charity called Acts Trust. And we decided that we wanted to help people in poverty. And so we basically allowed like an explosion of lots of different projects in the city for people in the church to engage with people in poverty. And so we were feeding the homeless, we were providing food parcels, we were teaching English to new arrival communities, we were mentoring people, we were doing all sorts of things. And at that point, the city council got really interested in what we were doing. So they started to say, oh, we'd like to give you some funding to do some of the things that you're doing. So we started to kind of we'd get a bit of funding through the door. And one of the things that we realised was, as we got the funding through the door, we needed to pay people to do the work that we were doing. And no one in the church wanted those jobs. And so we started to recruit people to do those jobs from outside of the church. And we also would have some of our homeless friends, they'd rock up on a Sunday morning, and the people in the church, just the regular Joe and John and Jenny in the church, would say, oh, you're homeless, I'll just get Joy for you, because basically what they're saying is, I don't quite know what to do with you. And we found that there was a real lack of church engagement with what we were doing. So me and a few of my friends and some of the people that we were paying to do the job were doing loads of stuff with people living in poverty in our city. And then the people in the pews were like, that's really great, we love it. In fact, we'll give you some money to do it, but I don't want this to affect my life. So even, you know, we'd go as far as having teams who would serve homeless people on a Monday night, but say, I don't want to talk to them on a Sunday because this is my time. And I went on maternity leave around this time and started, you know, when you're up in the middle of the night and you're feeding your baby and you're thinking and dreaming and starting to wonder. I started to think, I think we might have created a bit of a monster. Like, I think we might have designed something by accident that actually has what we thought would get our church to engage with people in poverty in our city actually has brought this big divide, and it feels uncomfortable. And I'm getting more and more frustrated with it as I go along. And so I started to read a few books and to ask a few questions and start to ask God, what are we doing anyway? Like, what is poverty anyway? And how do we really help people who are living in poverty? And I read a book that changed my life after Jesus changed my life. It's called When Helping Hurts, and I'd massively recommend it to anyone who's interested in helping anyone in any way, shape or form, not just people who we think are poor. And I want to just really quickly go through the main thing that I learned when I read that book and how it changed what we did in Lincoln and actually changed how I engage with my neighbours in my village, or changed how I chat to the people who are in church and how I pastor them. It changes how I think about myself and it changes how I connect and relate to God. And so I want to talk you through it. It was really cool as we were praying before the service. Dave brought this kind of word, prophetic word. He said, I think today is about image restored. And Claire read from a passage in Corinthians, which says that we are going, God is taking us from one degree of glory to the next, and we're changing every day to look more like the person that he first made us to be. So in the beginning, we all know in Genesis, God created man and woman in his image. The Bible says, in the image of God, he created them. And so this is you. God made you. He made you on purpose, and he made you specifically to look the way that you look. He gave you gifts and talents and incredible, unique things that are unique only to you. There's no one else on this planet that is like you. And he made you to be in relationship with four key relationships, four key things. The first relationship that God made you to be in is relationship with himself. He looked at you and he said, Matt, I'm going to make you in my image and I want you to be friends with me. I want you to walk with me. I want you to do the things that I would do. And so he made us in his image to be connected to him. And then he also made us in his image to be connected and in relationship with ourselves. So that's the second key relationship, that we are connected to be in relationship with ourselves. You know, when Jesus said the greatest commandment is to love your neighbor as you love yourself, which indicates that we have to be connected and in relationship with ourselves, and we need to love ourselves. And we need to view ourselves the way that God views us, as daughters and sons, as people who are worthy to be in relationship with him, and as people who love ourselves so we can love other people. And then the third relationship that God made us to be in is relationship with other people. So God said when he made Adam, he didn't want Adam to be on his own. He wanted to give Adam a helper or a friend to walk and do life with. And so he made Eve. And in the same way, he's put us in family. He's put us in church. He's put us together so that we can do life in community. And we were never intended to be on our own. And then the fourth thing that God created us to be in relationship with is material resources or the world around us. So when he gave Adam and Eve the mandate, he said to them before the fall, create, fulfill, fill the earth, be fruitful and multiply, subdue the earth, which really means rule over the earth. Take your leadership that I've given you, because I made you to look like me and I'm a leader. Take the leadership that I've given you and make something happen in the earth. So he designed us to like cultivate the earth, to, you know, the garden, to make something good with it, to create things, to steward finance and to be in charge of the economy, to build things, to invent things. He made us physical people so we could live in a physical world. But then we know what happened in the next part of the story. In Genesis 3, the fall happened, which really means that Adam and Eve, or humanity, decided to go in their own way and do their own thing. And as a result of the fall, all four of these relationships are significantly broken in every person who walks the earth. And I want to suggest to you that in your relationship, or in your relationships, in those four relationships that you're sitting in some way, shape, or form, there's brokenness. I know for me there is definitely brokenness. And I want to show you how this manifests. So our broken relationship with God looks like spiritual poverty. Our broken relationship with ourself looks like poverty of being, poverty of self. Our broken relationship with others is our poverty of community. And our broken relationship with the land or with resources or with stuff is material poverty. And I want to tell you how this works itself out on a kind of continuum. So let's look at the first type of poverty. So poverty of spiritual poverty, poverty of spiritual intimacy. We were created to be in relationship with God, weren't we? So he wants to connect with us. And this could look like in all different ways, but let's imagine it's a continuum. So over here, we could have people who deny the existence of God completely. They are in spiritual poverty. It's a bit different to what Jesus describes as poor in spirit. So try not to confuse. It's like spiritual poverty. It's like we're not in relationship with God. We're not connected with God because we worship other gods, or we deny God's existence. But over here, so I don't worship other gods. I'm not a Hindu, or I don't deny God's existence. But I do find myself a little bit on this scale when I maybe worship or give too much attention to other things over Jesus. So we sing, "You have no rival, you have no equal." But actually, I know that I'm singing that. I'm saying to God, I don't want you to have any rival in my life. But sometimes I know my comfort comes above you, Jesus. And so we, our relationship with God's broken because it may be what you think, how you perceive others to think of you, and whether you think you want to please other people. Does that come before what Jesus says about you? Do you worship your finances and what, you know, work so hard that you want more money to get more things? Does that come before your relationship with God? At some point in this continuum, perhaps your relationship with God is not quite what he would love it to be, and there might be poverty there or brokenness. The second one then, the poverty of being, the poverty of self. It looks like over here, perhaps low self-esteem. And we see this all the time. If I'm going to be really honest and vulnerable with you, that's where I would place myself. Sometimes I don't think I'm as good as what God thinks I am. My perception of myself isn't really always what God says about me. I get anxious when I get in a room with new people because I'm worried, are they going to like me? And that's because I'm not as connected to myself as I could be. But over here, there's like another area on this continuum. And this would be like a God complex. This would be like, I am so good that the whole world needs to look at me and see how amazing I am. Like a kind of Messiah complex. I'm going to rescue the world because I'm the one. I'm God's gift to the world, which actually we are God's gift to the world. But there is a kind of, you know, a fine line, isn't there, of how we view that. So this is the continuum of the poverty of self. And then the third one is poverty of community. And let's look over here. We've got, if you're not in community, often the people that come through our church door that I have the privilege of walking alongside are so isolated and lonely. They don't know what family looks like. They're broken and poor because they're not connected to people, and that's how God create them to be. But you could be on the completely other end of the continuum, and I would suggest that that looks like exploitation and abuse of others. And so that's why we like to think, where do we, we're so disconnected sometimes from our purchases and the way that we spend our money, that potentially, if we don't realize that we're in relationship with other people, that even our financial transactions affect other people. I love the way you've got all this fair trade stuff. That's you guys saying we want to be in relationship with the people that we buy our stuff from, and so that we don't exploit or abuse people, because that's poverty of community as well. Does that make sense? And then the last one, which is what we would all think of poverty. We'd all think, what is poverty? Oh, someone who's not got stuff. And that is poverty, but I want to suggest that all of these things are poverty. So the last one is the poverty of material poverty, or poverty of stewardship. Because God created us to steward finances and stuff. Like, we don't want to be separate from those things. It's a really important relationship that he made us to be in. But one side of the continuum could look like unemployment, loss of purpose. Someone who has nothing feels like their self-esteem is low because they're not doing what actually they were created to do, which is to work. God put us in this world to work. And so loss of purpose, loss of sense of empty cupboards, debt, people who can't pay their way or have the financial means to cope with life. And then at the other end of this is perhaps workaholicism. So someone who would work and work and work and work and see that more important than anything else. And so that's where our relationships look broken. And I love this quote by the guy that came up with this whole thing. He says, poverty is the result of relationships that do not work, that are not just, that are not for life, that are not harmonious or enjoyable. Poverty is the absence of shalom in all its meanings. And I started to look at this and try and understand it and think, so we think the people that come in through our door who need a food parcel are poor. But as I start to think they're the poor people and I'm not poor, I start to interact with them in a way that actually just exacerbates and increases their poverty. And so we were doing all sorts of, I think, really brilliant, charitable things. But God doesn't call us to be charitable assistants. He calls us to be change agents. And as part of that, we have to see a change in ourselves as well. He doesn't call us just to give handouts, but he calls us to see those four key relationships reconnected at every possible moment. And so as we look to just give poor people, and I use that poor people because I don't really agree with that term. I would always refer to someone who lives with the broken relationship with material things as people living in material poverty rather than poor people, because no one wants to be labelled as a poor person. And I want to give self-esteem and value and dignity to the people that walk through our door who need a food parcel, so that their relationship with themselves can be fixed, and so that they find self-esteem and identity as well as their relationship with stuff. And if we just continue to give stuff to people, then we'll never see those four key relationships fixed. And so we have to really think, how do we look to engage with the people around us to see those four relationships come into wholeness? But before we do that, we have to reflect on ourselves. In what way is your relationship with God or yourself or with the community or with stuff broken? And how can an encounter with Jesus, who restores all things, brings all things into that word shalom, which just means wholeness and peace and what would have been in the way that he first created it to be, back on track, restored, what would it look like? And so before I jump into encounter that Jesus has with the woman at the well, I just want to do a quick experiment and show you what it looks like for us. And this is not just for charity projects, but this is for, like, how do you engage with your neighbor and the person that you see has got, like, a brokenness in their life. So I just need two volunteers, and love it if you could put your hand up if you're really up for volunteering. Great. Do you want to come up? Anyone else? Brilliant. Would you like to come up? What's your name?
Victoria.
I met you earlier. Great. Okay. Why don't you come over here, guys? And I'm just working out how I'm going to do this. I want you to imagine that this is a river, okay? And on this side of the river is poverty. So that's like brokenness. That might look like addiction. It might look like broken self-esteem. It might look like unemployment. It might look like someone who doesn't believe in Jesus. And then I want you to imagine that this other side of the river, this bank of the river, is what I've just described as shalom, as wholeness, as it's being fixed, and there's as much as possible wholeness. And now I want to imagine that Sam is in poverty. So he's in poverty in some way, shape or form, and he needs to get to the other side. And I wonder, Matt, if you could come and help me.
Yes.
Great. So, Matt, I just wonder if you could get Sam to jump on your back. Yeah, I didn't think you'd want that. Great, okay. Now, Sam's really heavy. His addiction and his poverty and his shame and his perhaps a bit of neediness is really weighing you down. It's weighing you down. But you need to help Sam, and you need to get him to the other side. Can you do that? Just keep going. I know it's really hard. You're tired. Okay, can stop. Why don't you just have a rest, because I know you're quite tired, and all Sam's issues are, like, stressing you out. Just pop him down for a minute. Yeah, you just stay there, Sam. Why don't you just come over here? Great. And Sarah, would you come and help me? So this is Sarah and Victoria, and they're gonna help. Sarah's going to help Victoria. Victoria is in pain. She's got all sorts of broken relationships, and she needs some support and help. And so Sarah is going to come and help Victoria. Why don't you hold her hand? Why don't you just walk across the river? See how you get on. How's it feeling? It might be easy, it might be difficult. Sometimes it's painful, but it's definitely not weighing you down, is it? It's not weighing you down like Matt was weighed down by Sam. Why don't you come to this side? And you're on this side. You've found wholeness. You've walked the journey together. You've done a great job. Well done. Why don't we give these guys a round of applause? Matt, could you stay here? You two ladies could sit down. Yeah, you're not. Sam's still stuck in the middle of the river. So, Matt, how's it feel when, what are you doing here? What are you doing over this side of the river?
Well, I'm free from brokenness, and it's pretty good for me.
Great. So what about Sam?
Yeah, it was too heavy. I couldn't make it, so.
Is there anything you learnt from Sarah and Victoria that you'd like to put in practice?
Yes.
Let's see then. Go on then. A lot easier. Brilliant. Great. Well done, guys. Why don't you give them a big round of applause? That exercise, it really just easily shows how when we try and rescue someone, so if we try and make a situation better by diving in because we think we're the rescuers, so we think we're on that side of the continuum, you know, the God complex, and we get worn out and feel overloaded, we often just dump people in the middle of the river because we can't continue the journey. What we find that is if we say we don't have all the answers, we're broken ourselves, but we just want to walk a journey with you, we want to be your friend, then often the friendship and the connection can get people through to the other side. But you need to have a really strong sense of self-reflection. Where in this situation, so even in pastoral care or even in relationship with your neighbour, there's loads of opportunity for us just to try and fix someone rather than really helping them. And I believe that every single time that Jesus engaged with someone in the Gospels, so every single time he met someone, he saw where their four relationships were broken, and he sought to see wholeness come to all four relationships. So he never left someone with a sense of one of those relationships broken. And I want to just show you through the woman at the well, just really quickly, how that looked. So if you don't know the story, it's in John 4. It's quite a long encounter, and so I don't think I've got time to read it right now, but you can look and have a look when you get home. John 4, verse 7, all the way through to verse 26. And this is what happens, let me tell you. Jesus is going from the town of Judea to the area of Judea to the town of Galilee. And he has to go through this area called Samaria, which is an area that is kind of like enemy territory in a way to the Jewish people. They're seen as like really unclean people. And because the Jewish people have to have this really strict conduct of law, they have to abide by loads of different laws. They're not really allowed to be, or they shouldn't be walking through this place called Samaria. But the Bible tells us that Jesus goes from Judea to Galilee, and he goes directly through Samaria. And he goes, and it's lunchtime, and it's hot. It's high noon. This is like full bright sunshine, and everyone can see. And that's a really important part of the story. He sits himself next to a well, and he waits for someone to come. And a woman turns up, and when she turns up, he asks her, "Will you give me a drink?" So imagine the Son of God who's asking, "Can you give me a drink?" Not only asking a woman, which would be completely like, out of order, but asking a Samaritan woman who would be seen as unclean. And she says to him, "Well, you're a Jew and I'm a Samaritan. How can you ask me for a drink?" And Jesus says, "If you knew the gift of God and who it is that asks you for a drink, you would have asked him and he would have given you living water." And so she says, "Sir, you've got nothing to draw with and the well's really deep. Where can you get this living water? Are you greater than our father Jacob who gave us the well in the first place?" Jesus answered, "Everyone who drinks this water will be thirsty again, but whoever drinks the water I give them will never thirst. Indeed, the water I give them will become the spring of water welling up to eternal life." So then the woman says, "I'd like some of this water. Please, can you give me some of this water so I won't get thirsty again?" And he says, "First of all, you need to go and get your husband and then come back." And she says, "I've got no husband." And he says, "Yeah, you're right, you've got no husband. In fact, you've got five husbands. And the man that you now have is not your husband." He's kind of like reading her completely. She's like shocked and astounded. How does this guy know that I have not got one husband, but I've got five? And so she says, "Okay, yeah, I can see, Jesus, that you're a prophet. And they have this conversation about God and worshipping God at a mountain. And he says to her, he describes to her what God looks like. And she says, I think you must be the Messiah. And then he sends her off on her way to go and tell her community. Something really powerful in this moment. I just want to explain to you what's so powerful about it. That in the full bright sunshine of noonday, Jesus encounters this woman who he should never have been near. He sits himself down on the well with no bucket. So all the people around in those communities would have taken their own bucket with them. He intentionally went empty-handed. There's something really, really vulnerable about Jesus's position in this moment where he's going to try and help other people or someone else as the son of the Most High God, but he's going empty-handed and he's going in a place where he shouldn't be. And I just want to suggest to you that there's two positions that we need to take when we go and see and help people who are living in poverty or their relationships are broken. And these are the two positions. And a position of authority, knowing exactly who it is that God's called us to be. You see, Jesus was full of authority. He fully knew who he was. He didn't care that he was walking through this unclean place called Samaria and he was going to be judged by other religious people around him. It didn't bother him in the slightest that he would be called unclean because of that, because he knew who he was. And he knew that uncleanliness happens in the heart, not in the people that you hang out with. And so for us, as we're looking, who are we going to hang out with? And thinking, will I be judged because of that person? Will I be seen as not being cool enough because I'm hanging out with those people who are like really uncool or really dirty or really frustrating or sometimes really hard work? But Jesus was a man of authority and he went into that situation full of authority. But the other really significant thing that he did, because you go in full of authority and that sounds like I'm powerful and I'm going to tell you where you're going wrong and I'm going to speak into you and I'm going to be controlling. But actually, Jesus didn't model that in the slightest. Jesus modeled full authority and full vulnerability. So he came into a situation empty-handed in order to see this woman who was totally broken find wholeness. So this woman, she was probably a prostitute. She would have been shamed and ostracized by her community and by society. She came at lunchtime, probably trying to tap up Jesus, trying to see if he was interested in some of her services. Most women would go to the well really early on in the day, but she didn't. She came at lunchtime. She's quite brazen, really, trying to hook up with Jesus. But instead of Jesus entertaining it, he came and said, this is who I am, but also I want you to help me. How about Jesus, the Son of God, asking a broken prostitute who was ostracized by society to help him? And in that moment, what he did, it was really significant. He said to her, you've got resources within yourself to help yourself. And I want to help you fix your relationship with yourself. Because I know that as you start to help yourself, you're less dependent on other people and you know who you are. So he kind of imparted his authority into her, saying, I know who I am. Now I want you to know who you are and I want you to go. His authority and his humility radically changed the situation. And so this woman who sees that her relationship with God is broken, her relationship with other people is broken. Her relationship with other people is broken because she can't go to the well with her friends. She has to come on her own. Her relationship with other people is broken because she's a prostitute and she's allowing herself to be exploited. Her relationship with herself is broken because she's a prostitute and she's allowing herself to be exploited. And her relationship with finances or with the material world is broken as well because she's allowing herself to be exploited. And so she's earning money possibly because of her relationship with men who exploit her. So you can see how all those four relationships in her life have been broken. But Jesus instead sets her back on track and gives her a powerful challenge to go to. He asked her for water and for drink, but then he said, the thing that you think that you need is not what you need. There's a spring of living water within you that I want to speak into life. And so that as you drink, you'll never be thirsty again. You won't be looking for other things to try and help you. You'll only be looking for that spring of living water that as you drink will just continue to sustain you. And so he elevates her self-worth. Only the strong are able to give to others. And this is where we look at when we as a church engage with people that we think are in poverty and we just try and give them stuff, we're not elevating their self-worth, but we're actually just exacerbating their brokenness and their need for our help, which sometimes makes us feel better, doesn't it? That's why we continue to do it. But he affirms her and out of her available resources, asks her to help him. And then he gives her three commands: to go and call and bring her husband. He challenges her to become a spring for others so that she's got something of worth to bring to her community in the same way that he's just imparted that to her. He's given her a new understanding of herself and of the surroundings, her surroundings and the people around her. And just for a minute, as we think about Jesus and how incredibly full of authority but incredibly vulnerable he is, he could have gone with no vulnerability and just told her that she was a sinner. He could have gone with massive vulnerability but no authority and just ended up playing around with her and being one of her six husbands. But the Son of God would never have done that because he's full of authority. Or he could have gone and had no authority and no vulnerability and just completely ignored her and walked past her and not engaged in communication with her at all. And I want to ask you guys today to think about the people around you. People you interact with, the mums on the school gate, or the people that you work with, your neighbours, your family. How are you working towards walking into the room with them full of authority? So understanding that you're made in the image of an incredible God who views you as unique, who wants to restore your image into fullness, who wants to bring out the incredible things in you, who wants you to apply his love to the world. How much of authority, how much do you understand that identity when you're relating to the people around you? And the second question is, how vulnerable are you in your life with others? How much are you prepared to ask other people for help so that they can see that they've got resources within them that can lift and elevate them? How affirming of others are you when you perhaps feel like you need to be affirmed, but instead you step out and you're vulnerable with others and you affirm others? How are you opening your life so other people can see maybe some of your insecurities and your weaknesses just so that you can connect and build relationship with other people? I want you to imagine that you walked into your situations full of authority and full of vulnerability, and imagine what it might look like tomorrow. And then I want to ask you the question about those relationships, those four relationships in your life. How, where are you on that broken continuum? And how reflective are you of yourself to know that perhaps in one of those relationships there's brokenness and poverty in your life that you need an encounter with Jesus to see fixed? But also, how much are you, when you engage with the people around you, are you engaging to try and fix just one aspect of their life rather than empowering them to see all of those four things fixed in their lives? And now I want you to close your eyes and I want you to imagine your tomorrow. So Monday morning, where will you be? Who are the people that you come into contact with? Maybe you won't meet anyone in material poverty, but I can guarantee you'll meet people who are in poverty of self, poverty of community, never been in family, poverty spirit of spirituality, all sorts of other things that they worship. And I want you to imagine, what if as a community we treated the problem of poverty accurately? That we didn't just think we're called to give people, just one sector of society, stuff. Not just those with empty cupboards, but all of those with broken relationships. And what would it look like for you to see those people that you've just imagined seeing tomorrow morning restored in all four relationships? And I want you to imagine yourself learning to be more like Jesus every day with the passage that Claire read to us when we prayed for this morning's service. We're moving from one degree of glory to the next. We're image bearers. We've got full authority as sons and daughters of the King. Yet we're strong enough to be vulnerable and to open our lives up to others. And I want you to imagine what that looks like in your life for the people that God's placed around you. And then I want you to ask the question, what do you need to do next? What is it that you need from God? What encounter with Jesus do you need to raise your authority levels or your vulnerability levels so that you can do what he's called you to do with strength and with humility? Holy Spirit, we invite you as we stand together. I'm standing too. With a sense of desperation to know that we can't make it on our own. And to know that you created us to be connected to the life source that brings ongoing restoration to our lives. So perhaps just open your hands to receive more from God, whether it's a heart revelation or an affirmation that you need. And first and foremost, God, we come before you as adopted children, as sons and daughters, to know that you chose us and you picked us and that you made us. And the things within us you've made good because you created them. And we just invite you to align our hearts with your truth. That we declare that we're your created masterpiece. That you've made us with authority. That you've given us all the good resources from heaven, that we're your children and you're pleased with us. And so we receive your affirmation today as your child, as your son, as your daughter. And we then just invite you to do whatever else you need to do to line up our understanding of who we are and who you are so that we can be walk in wholeness and shalom. So that we can be connected to other people, so that we can give and serve and love and see other people find wholeness. So we can be really strong and know who it is that you've made us to be, and so that we can channel resources for the advancement of your kingdom and nothing else. And so we stand as church open-handed, believing that you've done something significant. And letting your spirit just work in us and through us to help fix us and put us back on track. And we believe that you've done it and declare it in your name. Amen.